With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
And good morning to you. I hope you just caught me putting on my makeup in the middle of Chris Smith's show, because sometimes that happens, doesn't it? And how are you this wonderful Tuesday? I don't know about you, but I'm so glad to see the back of that full moon. That was a big one, wasn't it? That had a huge impact on us. A number of people have said to me, cool, what a day that was. And it was indeed. But we are now back on the road to recovery. And talking about which, today is a huge historic day. Well, judgment will be handed down at the High Court at 10:30 a.m. UK time regarding the Julian Assange verdict. Assange's team are asking for the right to appeal against extradition to the US for the journalist. TNT, of course, reported from outside the High Court at the recent Assange hearings, as his fate was being determined by two very experienced judges. If Assange loses he will be extradited to the US. His team say he faces up to 175 years in prison. Stella, his wife, said he will not survive should he be extradited. Many people who know or who have observed him say the same thing. So what was his crime exactly? Well, of course, it was the crime of being an actual journalist. He received war crime information from Chelsea Manning, who was the actual whistleblower and who supplied evidence of the USA's heinous behaviour. And it is absolutely unquestionable of public interest. Together, they revealed war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. American military at its absolute worst as war-hungry, murderous imbeciles who reveled in killing people and thumped their chests in self-congratulation when they did. For this, Julian Assange has been persecuted for 14 years. He's been demonised and smeared, locked away from his wife and children, his life becoming increasingly smaller. First in the Ecuadorian embassy where he sought refuge, and now in a tiny cell in a maximum security prison surrounded by murderers in Belmarsh, London. And this morning will be a major decision. I mean, it's really interesting. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm praying for Julian and his family. The judges are Dame Victoria Sharp, Justice Jeremy Johnson. And it is going to be really interesting, because there's some interesting history here. The Prime Minister Theresa May was actually the person who had previously promoted Dame Victoria Sharp. It was also the Prime Minister Theresa May as Home Secretary who authorised police to seize Assange from the Ecuadorian embassy in 2019. And it's been a series of British Home Secretaries ever since who have given UK approval for Assange's extradition to the USA. There has been a long history of concerns about whether the judges involved are too establishment. And there is no doubt that the current two High Court judges who are overseeing this are very much linked to the establishment. Judge Sharp, a barrister, she acted in several high-profile cases, for example, representing media corporations such as Associated Newspapers, which owns the Daily Mail, Mail on Sunday, and Times Newspapers, obviously Murdoch's newspaper. Then there's Justice Jeremy Johnson. He's a specially vetted barrister, cleared by the UK authorities to access top secret information. He once represented MI6 as a barrister, and he also represented the UK's Ministry of Defence. And of course, Assange has been seen to embarrass both the secret services and defences. And so there is concerns that there may be a conflict of interest here. Because as I say, Assange has upset security forces in both the US and UK. But there is some hope, because these judges have also offered some hope previously. They have ruled against extraditing a Briton to the US for a cryptocurrency fraud, arguing that it was possible to prosecute him in the UK. So the question is, what are they going to do with Julian Assange today? We can only hope. I am seriously concerned if they decide to, well, essentially, if Assange and his team lose their chance to appeal. He's been hounded for doing his job. And let us hope that the judges have really been able to step back and see that this is clearly a witch hunt on behalf of America. It's time to end this farce once and for all. We can but hope, can't we? Of course, TNT will bring you the news as it happens, so stick with us. And talking about the very person who is almost certain to bring you that news, let us welcome her in this morning for the UK news headlines. That is Gemma Cooper. Be right.
Conversations to inform and include.
It's meant for everyday people to understand.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And here she is. Good morning, Gemma. How are you?
Well, I'm like you, Sonia, actually. I'm a bit on tenterhooks for Assange because I think there's a sentence there that you just said which nails it. Hounded for doing his job. Hounded for doing his job. That's the threat that will lie across all journalists' futures if we have any real journalists left in the world that aren't just spouting PR propaganda, whether it comes from a palace, whether it comes from a government source, or whether it comes from a globalist think tank. You know, that's not journalism. Journalism is what he did. And look where he is. He's you know, he's on a knife edge, as you rightly say. So it is one to watch with interest. And it is making the UK headlines. As soon as Stella Assange last night posted on X that this was the day, the response was, you know, overwhelming. Thoughts and prayers are with you. Hope it goes the right way. And of course, many, many, many people commenting on the judge's impartiality or non-impartiality and backgrounds. Of course, you know, that is a thing to consider. But of course, we were there. TNT was there. I mean, I was here in the studio doing rolling coverage on reaction from around the world during that week of that hearing. I mean, you know, Anthony Albanese waded in and saying he was having top diplomatic talks at the highest level between the Australian government and US diplomats. We don't quite know how that went. He said he was doing everything he could to secure Assange's release and put him back at where he belongs on Australian soil. We'll have to see today the reaction from the Australian government, depending on how the verdict goes. But, you know, there was no doubt that global eyes were on the High Court in London a few weeks ago, and TNT was there broadcasting live, and their eyes will be on the High Court in London today, and campaigners and supporters gathering outside as we speak this morning. You know, the placards will be out. Everybody will be waiting to see what this verdict will be. And I think the judges are very aware of that. This is not some, you know, tin pot little cyber hacking. Well, even the cyber hacking, we'll talk about a cyber hacking story in a minute. But, you know, this is not some small potato hearing. This is the hearing about press freedoms now, because they're being eroded like never before. Only yesterday we were talking about the investigatory powers bill being debated in Parliament, which would give the government right to look into social media companies more and see what we're doing. And that's where a lot of journalism goes on now, on social media feeds. And the establishment knows that. So it really is a monumental day for press freedom, and we'll see where it goes. You know, Super Tuesday.
I mean, let's sincerely hope for the best. But I think that journalists have been utterly remiss here, because obviously this can impact us all. Unquestionably, it will set a horrendous precedent in many respects. But, you know, it's like Australia. They're a bit too little too late. Same with journalists who are sort of rallying round now. But thank God for what we do here. And obviously, we all work together for that coverage. You, as you say, in the studio, providing sterling support to us at the High Court. Gemma, you were able to feed us information that we simply weren't receiving necessarily right outside the High Court. Oftentimes, when you're right at the place that it's happening, it can take a little while before the news to circulate round to you. But you were in there, and that was absolutely wonderful teamwork, properly, because we are journalists round here, and proudly so. And that's exactly why we're hoping for the best possible outcome for Julian Assange and his family, because I think people often forget, don't they, Gemma, that he's a family man and a husband. This is a father to two boys. They don't know their father outside of prison or outside a confined space.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a huge nod to Stella Assange and what she has had to endure, because she's seen very much as the face of the campaign Free Assange, but she's his wife. And you must think about the personal toll it has taken on her. She's maintained a very dignified composure. I mean, Julian himself was too unwell to attend his own hearing. I think that really does speak volumes about the toll this has taken on him. And he knows he's got global support, but equally, it can't be, you know, think about the reality of his day-to-day existence. sense. And for doing what, you know, as you rightly say, hounded for doing his job, it really is the most, it's a miscarriage of justice as far as I'm concerned. And she's really, you know, stayed dignified, stayed strong externally to muster the, and lead the support. I mean, last time there was a march, wasn't there, onto Whitehall, onto Westminster. It really depends on how the verdict goes today as to whether or not they'll be, the spirits will be high or crushed. So let's hope it's the former and not the latter. But yeah, so onto a few headlines making the rounds in the UK. I mean, obviously that was the biggest one for us here at TNT, decision day for Julian Assange, campaigners and supporters gathering outside the High Court. Another big story though, happening just down the road in Whitehall was last night. Farmers, UK farmers, descended on the Houses of Parliament. More than 100 tractors blocked the roads outside government. Farmers protesting still in the UK, the biggest one so far, about cheap imports and farming regulations, which they say are strangling them. Let's see how that goes. Staying with the Houses of Parliament, China now, after yesterday, has officially been branded a threat to UK security. Yesterday afternoon, after we were off air here at TNT, the UK's deputy PM said, yes, cyber attacks by China on millions of UK citizens. Citizens' data was a thing, and has sanctioned two people and one company now in China. And many, many Tory MPs are saying this doesn't go far enough. They want tougher regulations against China and the threat it poses to the UK. And the number of smart meters in British homes that are not working properly has risen to nearly 4 million, leaving customers with massive inaccurate bills, which they say are affecting their mental health, and companies aren't repairing those smart meters in a timely fashion. So quite a lot going on across UK society today. But of course, it's Assange that we're watching, and the farmers' protest as well, the biggest one so far. Will it be the last? I very much doubt it.
I think it can get interesting in Westminster today, can't it, Gemma? Because we have farmers down there and they're protesting. And then, you know, it is possible that Assange followers and supporters may also make their way to Westminster. I might attempt to make my way to Westminster myself today, because these are the moments that I really enjoy as a journalist, when we get down there and you can just feel the energy of people who are outraged about one situation or another. But the Chinese story that you mentioned is very interesting. Can we drill down on that a little bit?
Well, this is effectively a story that I was covering all day yesterday ahead of the deputy PM's announcement. It had been leaked on Sunday night saying this is going to happen. It basically, the Chinese or Chinese individuals or companies were accused of hacking into the Electoral Commission's data in 2021. The story came to light last year, and that's got data of millions of UK citizens' addresses and personal details. That's the electoral roll. And it is a significant thing, because if you're not on the electoral roll, you don't get a very good credit rating. So it does hold a lot of data about UK citizens. And the US and the UK have long been looking at China as a kind of a threat to UK security. And yesterday, Oliver Dowden did stand up 3:30 in the House of Commons and said, yes, China was responsible for that attack. It poses a threat to British society. We need to do more. And then he went on to sanction two individuals and one company. I think the company is based in Wuhan. A lot of Tory MPs are like saying it was taking a wooden spoon to fight a battle. They said this doesn't go far enough at all. Rishi Sunak was kind of sitting on the fence yesterday, as we discussed. He said we need to stay friends with China. Obviously, we do a lot of trade with China. So Richie was not keen to upset the beast, as it were. But MPs have been targeted. There's a group of MPs, Ian Duncan Smith, former leader of the Tory party, is one of these MPs. And they sit on a committee which kind of scrutinizes China and criticizes some of the things that come out of Beijing. They've been targeted as individuals. And they are calling for tougher sanctions on China. So it's a response to the announcement yesterday. Yes, China was responsible for hacking into UK data, but we're just going to sort of put a sticking plaster on it. We're not breaking off trade with China. Hopefully that will be enough. But what the UK is worried about, and what the US is worried about, and actually India, is the ability for China and hackers to affect the outcome of elections. They have said that is a distinct possibility, and that is a thing that I think ministers are hoping the government will be able to, you know, issue some laws or tightening of restrictions or further sanctions to clamp down on that as a possibility. But that was quite a significant announcement yesterday to say, you know, China is a threat. China's been hacking us. But what the response we gave was not strong enough for many.
Do you know, the reason I wanted you to drill down on that one in particular is later on in the show, we have Jasmine Bertels joining us. Obviously, she's a money expert. She's actually going to be talking about the fact that we are still giving millions each year in aid to China. The utter and total hypocrisy that on the one hand, we're worried about security issues to do with China, and yet we are funding them to the tune of 7.1 million per year. Absolutely outrageous. And that just doesn't that just show you that what goes on in politics is not just hypocrisy, but they either don't do joined up thinking or they just simply don't care about us anymore. And they're just going to carry on doing exactly what they want to do. That is an important story that you've said. And I think especially to the backdrop of the sheer volume of aid that we're giving them, doesn't that just say so much about our parliament, Gemma? Can we ever trust them again? Have we ever hit such a period of such a lack of trust and faith in our political representatives?
I very much doubt it. I mean, I don't think it's ever been any different. I think what is different now is the ability of the people on the ground to use, coin the expression that a lot of people in the alternative movement use, but do your own research or monitor them much more closely, because the speed at which information is disseminated, the way that we're able to even see into the House of Commons now, you know, Parliament TV and TV channels, well, you know, this has not been the case in the last hundreds of years. You know, you just trusted blindly what your government said, not realizing that what they were really doing, the elite and the establishment, was protecting vested interests. That's all they've ever done, is look after their own. Now we're saying, well, no, you should be looking after us. And as I've often said here, we're at a pivotal crossroads in human evolution, in the way we pursue our lives now, trusting authority or not trusting authority. We're at this fork in the road, whether we carve out our own way and try and self-govern, or whether we blindly follow these institutions, which it's becoming apparent, whether it's the police in the UK, governments in the UK, corporations around the world, have never served our interests. So it's an interesting one. As you say, the sheer hypocrisy, that's why these sanctions, in inverted commas, that were issued yesterday are so weak, because we have a relationship. The establishment has a relationship with China. They want to protect that, but they have to be seen to be doing something, because millions of people in the UK had their data hacked. But we see through it, and we're not the only ones, not by a long, long way anymore.
Go, Gemma. Keep speaking truth to power, says Alex on Instagram. And so say all of us. Gemma will be joining us again in the second hour. And for now, thank you so much, Gemma. We will speak to you shortly. We'll be right back.
TNT's Mark Morano.
And there's a whole history of this idea that the establishment, the powers that be, the regime in power, likes the idea of a little eco-terrorism to keep the population hungry. I mean, if you think about it, their policies, government policies of the Great Reset, Net Zero, Climate Agenda, are quite literally eco-terrorism, or a form of terrorism. It's, as Jesse Jackson used to say, it's economic violence, it's economic terrorism. Jesse Jackson used to say that about the Reagan administration. But in this case, it's the intentional collapse of energy, food, transportation, free speech, all to achieve and make us safer and give them more power under the auspices, if you will, of a crisis.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Our next steps to space.
This time we go back to the moon to learn to live, to work, to invent, to create.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Thank you, Gemma, says one and all. We do love Gemma's reports around here, obviously. Shug says, like as I keep saying, 80% of the public are about as bright as a blackout. The power grabbers absolutely rely on them remaining dumb and giving their consent away by voting, in quotes. They invest millions every year to make sure we stay dumb, in fact. Yes, and there is no doubt about it. There is an active drive to dumb us down, and much of it starts in schools. But that's a whole other story for a whole other time. I'm about to be joined by somebody who is extremely passionate passionate, and rightly so, about their campaigns. And the Samaritans' latest report refers to the financial cost of suicide in the UK. Now, if that's from the overall cost to how much each individual suicide costs us as a nation. And I looked at that and my heart sank, because isn't this a somewhat oversimplistic, shallow and cynical way, and clinical way actually, to look at something so heartbreakingly sensitive as suicide? And shouldn't a charity dealing with people who contemplate suicide be more careful with their words? Well, to answer this and so much more, I am joined today by Paul Vittles. He's a suicide prevention campaigner. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning, Sonia.
Thank you so much for joining us. It was actually your tweet that alerted me to this campaign. And this isn't the first time that the Samaritans have broken it down like this. But I have to say that I found it somewhat heartbreaking. And I can imagine, as a campaigner, you were none too pleased.
Well, no, I think we have to look at the context of this. And I've worked professionally in suicide prevention for over 10 years. I've also got my own personal lived experience of suicide. If you've had that personal experience, it's very much a human issue. It's a tragic loss. It's enduring pain and suffering. And you don't need to put a dollar amount or a pound amount on it, because it's a big enough, bad enough issue in itself. But unfortunately, we live in a world where the human and moral case is not enough. We have governments and big business and people who are only interested in the money. They're not interested in the human cost. And so what we have to do, and what the Samaritans have to do, is every now and again go into their world and say, right, okay, well, clearly you're not doing enough for the human and moral case. What about the business case? It costs the economy £10 billion a year in preventable suicide deaths.
It is extraordinary. So let's just look at some of these figures. In the UK in 2022, 6,588 deaths by suicide recorded, £9.58 billion, which is the overall cost of suicide. And this I found extraordinary. They're saying that each death by suicide costs an average of £1.46 million, which I find extraordinary. Do you feel that those are accurate figures?
Yes, they are accurate figures. I mean, as it happens, my initial sort of training was as an economist. So when the London School of Economics got involved in this, I thought, OK, I'll have a close look at this. And I've worked with other economists, and it is actually quite helpful. And I think what the Samaritans has done is really helpful in this regard with the London School of Economics, because they raise the awareness of all these different impacts and all the costs. So what happens is, when somebody dies by suicide, there's the immediate costs of the police and funerals and coroners and counselling and all that kind of stuff. And the inquest process can go on for 2 years for some people. Some people, the system screws up, and so they have to go through a second inquest, and it's really just pain upon pain upon pain. But there's all these counselling costs and enduring costs for, later in life when they have PTSD and so on. And then you've got what the economists describe as lost productivity. So if you lose somebody who's 30 years old, and they take life to suicide, and sadly lots of 30-year-olds do, then that's a person who isn't contributing productively to the economy for the rest of what would have been their working life. So, as I say, it can sound a bit harsh, and as you said, shallow, it can sound a bit shallow, but it's actually useful to be able to take people through this process of how we calculate these things, and it can bring together the human aspect of this as well. Somebody's bereaved, taking time off work, etc. These are the real impacts.
I mean, these are good points you're making. I'm just looking at some details here. It's been estimated that 135 people are affected every time someone takes their life. I don't think we ever look at it like that, do we? We obviously just look at the sort of the immediate cost to the individual and the loved ones. But that is quite extraordinary what you've had to say. And thank you for giving me a broader picture, because I'm absolutely open to having my mind expanded on this issue. I know a number of people who have been personally touched by suicide, and obviously it never leaves you. Are you able to tell us some of your personal experience, Paul?
Well, my first lived experience of suicide loss was actually in 1980. It goes back a long way, when I was living in the northeast of England in Teesside, and it was the time when all the factories were shutting down, the steelworks were shutting down, the shipyards were shutting down. So we had places that went from, you know, 95% male employment to 95% male unemployment overnight. And the devastation to those communities meant that we had these big, tough, hard, resilient blokes who'd never had any history of mental ill health. And the only time they'd ever been near a psychiatric hospital was to play football in the grounds, you know. So they suddenly started taking their lives. And that was a real wake-up call for me. And then, sadly, we've lost a family member to suicide more recently during the lockdown in 2020.
Sorry.
And in my counselling work, I mean, I come across people all the time who've had this experience. But the numbers, I think, you know, we do need to think about the human individual impact. But those numbers are important. 6,000, not just 6,000 plus deaths every year, 6,000 plus preventable deaths every Oof. Year. The biggest killer of men and women aged under 35, we lose 200 school children to suicide every year. One in 15 of the population make a suicide attempt. And that 135 figure is verified by two separate studies. So on average, 135 people are adversely and directly impacted by a suicide death. I've just been doing an article about the last 16 years because 16 years is when we last had a downward trend in the suicide numbers, oh. right? 16 years ago. In that 16-year period, I've calculated we've had over 100,000 preventable suicide deaths. And if you multiply that by the 135, that's 13.5 million people who've been adversely, directly impacted by suicide in this country.
These are really sobering facts that you're hitting us with this morning, Paul. Let us go to some news headlines and we will be right back.
TNT.
Here's what's making news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. The White House continues to shrug off claims that Ukraine played a part in Friday's terrorist attack in Moscow, saying the sole responsibility lies with Islamic State. China's warned relations with the Philippines have reached a crossroads following yet another aggressive confrontation in the South China Sea. And US presidential candidate Donald Trump has warned Israel to wrap up its war in Gaza because it's losing the world's support.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction.
Misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
I'm here talking with Paul Vittles today, and he's telling us about the stark cost, financial, emotional, physical, how it extends to the wider community of 6,000 preventable suicide deaths every year in the UK. Suicide, as his tweet said to me this morning, is the biggest killer of men and women aged under 35. And we were just talking about the Samaritan's latest report, which I found really quite disturbing because it kind of put all the money, all the finance up top. But Paul has just quite accurately explained to me why that is. And that is, we also live in a world of money men and money women who want to know the financial breakdown of this. And this is how we speak to governments, sadly. Now, Paul, talk me through the Jordan Legacy UK. You are a partner with this. What is this?
Steve Phillip lost his son Jordan to suicide in December 2019 at the age of 34. So Jordan is one of those statistics. And of course, he's not just a statistic. He was loved by many people. And Steve set up the Jordan Legacy, as many bereaved parents do, to try and stop other people having to go through that experience, both the experience that Jordan had and the experience that his family had after Jordan took his life. So I've worked with Steve. I'm a collaborative partner with the Jordan Legacy. We did a groundbreaking report. That wasn't our terminology. That was suicide prevention leads around the country. He said it was a groundbreaking report. Last year, 2023, called Moving Towards a Zero Suicide Society. And we defined that as a society that is willing and able to do all it can to prevent all preventable suicides, because not all suicides are preventable, sadly, but most of them are. And we put that report out, we got feedback, we put a second edition out, We've had people from around the country, we've had professors who've worked in this field for 30 years looking at our work and saying this is challenging everything we've believed about suicide for the past 30 years. So we, you know, I've critiqued the government's national strategy as woeful, shameful, harmful, and the suicide prevention strategy that prevents us from preventing suicides. And we've put forward an alternative, and we're rolling that out next this year in June. We've got a Humber to Mersey tour in June. We've got a massive conference in Scunthorpe, which is going to cover more issues, more angles on suicide than ever before. Issues have never been covered at a suicide prevention conference before, like injustice-related suicides. And then we go across the tour, we get to Merseyside in time for the Global Zero Suicide Summit, 24th, 25th of June. And we've got a Merseyside Festival, and we've got a lineup of lived experience speakers, bands, performance poets, improv comedians. And we've got the Bootle Lock and Key venue said they've been following our work for the past 3 years, want to support us in any way they could. And they've got a 5,000 capacity venue, and they've donated it to us free for 2 days, Saturday the 22nd of June and Sunday the 23rd of June.
Amazing. That's wonderful when, you know, sort of communities rally around like that. And you are absolutely right, Paul. I think one of your missions is to, you know, break down and expose the myths that are surrounding suicide. And even in an email to me, you said something that made me go, oh, that's interesting. You said one of the many myths is that suicide is a mental health issue. More often than not, it's a life crisis with many causes. Talk to us.
Yeah, in the official ONS statistics, suicide is listed as a cause of death. That's the terminology that's used. But suicide isn't a cause of death. Suicide is a means of death. The causes are many and multiple. And so what tends to happen is most people who take their own lives have no history of mental ill health. They've never been into NHS mental health services. Only a quarter of people who take their own lives have actually been into NHS mental health services. So what happens is that people hit a crisis, and they're fine one day and they're in suicide crisis the next. They've lost the job. They've lost their home. Their relationship is broken down. They've got gripped by a gambling addiction. They have lost access to their children. We've got a speaker at our conference who was a former high-flying executive and barrister and was completely destroyed by the family court system when he couldn't get access to his children. So he went into suicide crisis. And unfortunately, we come across these cases all the time. Ruth Perry, you remember Ruth Perry, the head teacher who took her own life when Ofsted downgraded her school?
I remember.
Told that it was going to be published in 90 days. That was going to be made public in 90 days. And she wasn't allowed to tell anybody about it. That was like a death sentence for Ruth. And at our conference on the 12th of June, we've got Ruth Perry's sister who's going to be joining us to give us more insight into that.
This is such important stuff you're doing. I was listening to a podcast featuring you. This is the North. And one of the things that you talked about, which I know to be absolutely true, is you talked about the disparity between North and South when it comes to suicide. Well, of course, there is a disparity between North and South when it comes to poverty. Are they related in any way?
Absolutely. We'll be covering those at the conference as well with somebody from the Joseph Rowntree Foundation, obviously from the poverty perspective. Absolutely. Those living in poverty have a higher suicide rate. Those on lower incomes have a higher suicide rate. Those people who lose their jobs and fall into financial difficulties have a higher suicide rate. And in the northeast of England, where I originate from, the suicide rate is twice that of London. Twice that of London in the same country, one region, twice that of another region. But we have to be careful because there are pockets, even within London and the southeast, there are pockets where there are higher suicide rates, like Rochester and Kent, for example, in the southeast. So we have to, people often say to me all the time, they say, you should be prioritising this area, you should be prioritising this group. What we do is we challenge the government's mentality, which is locked into scarce resources, must set priorities, only so much money available. It's a money-oriented culture. We say our philosophy is everyone must be a priority for someone. So we coordinate and collaborate, we don't compete. And we say, how can we work together with everybody, put all the pieces in the puzzle, join up all the, join the dots is our tour. Our tour is called the Join the Dots Tour. Join up the people, the organisations, the issues, and actually say, we're looking for the gaps here. Who's not being looked after by the system? Like unemployed people, You know, if you lose your job, you don't go down to local unemployed persons advocacy organization and lobby to be included in the government's national strategy. You're completely isolated, trapped, hopeless, and more likely to take your life.
You're like the fourth emergency service. This is phenomenal public service work that you're doing here, Paul. Please tell me, before you leave us this morning, on a sort of practical level, should we encounter somebody who is suicidal and in danger of taking their own life, what would you recommend that we would do?
All of the research and evidence shows, and this includes everywhere in the world where the numbers have come down significantly, you must ask direct questions. And people are terrified of asking direct questions, but you have to ask them. You have to ask somebody who you think is possibly at risk, no matter how remotely at risk. Have you had thoughts of ending your life? Have you made a plan to end your life? Because people do plan it and often rehearse it. And you can actually stop that outcome or get a different outcome. And people being told that end up more terrified because they're terrified of asking that question. It doesn't actually make somebody who isn't suicidal, it doesn't make them suicidal. It doesn't plant a seed. All it does is where you've got somebody who is suicidal, they're relieved that you've asked the question. And at last, somebody's actually asked me that question. But it's tough. So I would recommend you go to get some basic training. And there's a 20-minute online training package on the ZeroSuicideAlliance.com website. That's ZeroSuicideAlliance.com. 20 minutes, take the training, have a conversation, save lives.
Fantastic. What an important message on this Tuesday. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Paul. Everybody, this is Paul Vittles. He's the co-creator of the Baton of Hope UK, and he's also a partner with the Jordan Legacy UK. And as you can hear, he's doing tremendous work to help prevent suicide. I will be right back.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands, heal our waters, and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. But every day we lose more of the places we love, and we urgently need to save endangered lands, waters, and wild species. The actions we take today will determine the tomorrow we leave to our children and grandchildren. The water they drink, the air they breathe, the beauty they experience. To learn more about how you can help protect and conserve our beautiful world, visit nature.org today.
Around here, bushfire is just a part of life. We've been through it before. And we'll get through it again. The people here all look out for each other. We're a community that does its bit to plan and prepare, to keep everyone safe. We live with bushfire, so we live bushfire ready.
You ever heard of a polyp? Sounds like a rare species of toad. Actually, it's a lump that grows inside me, your bowel. Look, I'm pretty sure if you had a strange lump growing on your forehead, you might get it looked at, right? But when they're growing inside me, nothing, nada. And the polyps I get can lead to Australia's second deadliest cancer. So, until there's a way to make them grow on your face, it's up to you to get me looked at. Got it?
Live from London, you're with Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
That was a very sobering but vital conversation. I'm just hearing on X, formerly Twitter, obviously, that there's been a cyber attack in Leicester. I'm told by Trudy, who is a listener, my friend cannot get her husband's death certificate because of it. She's deeply upset as it's causing extra stress. This is really weird stuff, isn't it? Right, listen, let us switch up a gear. And I am delighted to welcome a returning commentator to the Sonia Poulton Show. He is Jim Ferguson, very popular commentator, former parliamentary candidate with the Brexit Party in Barnsley. He's a businessman, he's an entrepreneur. He is also the founder of Freedom Train International. And today he is here to join me to talk about the Westminster Farmers Protest. We were just talking, weren't we, in that brief break, Jim? First of all, thank you for joining us. Jim, we always appreciate you joining us on today's News Talk. Great to have you. We were just talking in the break about how it is quite incredible to see these huge tractors, this machinery descend on Westminster, the seat of the British Parliament, and no coverage across legacy media. Jim, that is extraordinary. Were you able to find any? Because I wasn't.
Good morning. It's great to be here with you again, Sonia. And no, there is no official coverage at all. Only the good news channels like TNT Radio and some others that are actually telling the truth. But they started to roll into Westminster yesterday evening. And you know something? There's just absolute crickets out there with the mainstream media. The lying mainstream media, of course, they don't want to cover it. The globalists are terrified that they're going to go and shut down Westminster. They tried the same dirty tricks in France, Germany, Holland, the Netherlands, all over the European Union. There was about 14, 15 countries actively involved now. And they're really terrified of what's going to go down in Westminster. So, but yeah, it just goes to show you cannot trust the mainstream media. Sky's not covering it. BBC is a discredited news source now. They can't be trusted. The only ones that can are you guys and us and a few others like us.
I mean, that is actually extraordinary, isn't it? Because this is on behalf of the British people. I was reading, you've obviously been tweeting about it. Some of the images just make my heart sing. I don't know about you. I love people coming together to progress against globalist policies personally. Makes me extremely happy. So tell us what you know about this particular protest, Jim.
Well, I was actually over in Holland about a week and a bit ago. I went over there to spend some time with the Dutch farmers there, who actually got the whole ball really rolling quite a number of years ago, because they have been getting a hard treatment from Mark Rutte, who is the Dutch outgoing prime minister. He is a globalist. He's a member of the World Economic Forum. And of course, he has been expropriating their farms, about 3,000 to 5,000 farms that have been targeted. So that basically means they're going to seize them. And I went across to Holland and attended a conference. Christine Andersen, the MEP, member of European Parliament, was there giving a speech on stage along with others. Very, very good speakers. And there were freedom fighters from Canada, the United States, Australia, the UK and the Netherlands, all at this conference. It was packed out. I'm estimating that there was about 700 people there. They had sold out.
Wow.
Then you couldn't take any more in. Yeah. Little place called Zwolle, which is about an hour's drive from Amsterdam. And there was a lot of planning, a lot of strategy taking place there. I was very, very pleased to meet some of the leaders there. I won't name them for obvious reasons, but I'll tell you, it's no surprise to see the UK now kicking off. And there's been some, I would say, some managing and resistance at some of the senior levels within the NFU, which is the National Farmers Union. And it might be interesting for TNT, maybe yourself, to do a little bit of investigation as to what links they actually have. You might be interested to know that actually some of them are also linked to the World Economic Forum. No surprises. So there's been some real attempts to stop the protests here from erupting and going into the UK. And there are some farmers who are going along with the sort of mantra of the WEF. Perhaps they've been bribed, perhaps they've been coerced. But there's also another faction that are saying, you know what, it's now or never. If we don't tackle this climate scam, net zero nonsense, we're going to be out of business. And by the way, just a shocking thing, I interviewed a very, very capable journalist quite recently from the Netherlands. I met him when I was in Holland. And he was telling me that the farms that they're purchasing, forcibly purchasing, might be worth, say, let's say £6,000 for a good farm. Well, they're only being given 2 million. So about a quarter to a third of the value of these farms. And they're not being given a choice. It's like they are taking that land and they are using it to house illegal migrants. So they're throwing farmers off their land that have farmed there for generations, Sonia, throwing them off the land for illegal migrants. It's beyond belief. But it's starting in the UK. Watch closely.
This is, I mean, we're dealing with levels of insanity here. And obviously there are many reasons why farmers around the world are protesting. But as you so correctly say, some of it is in part absolutely to do with the whole kind of climate scam nonsense, the net zero lunacy that's taking place. And also in the UK, as in other countries, farmers are sort of being outpriced, aren't they, by cheap imports that are being brought in, I think really essentially by sort of globalists sorting out their globalist friends. I think that was one comment that I picked up from your thread, and I thought that completely resonates with me. That's exactly what's happening.
It is. You've got Rishi Sunak, you've got Keir Starmer. You know, these are globalist sellouts. They have got no interest in the United Kingdom at all, not even the remotest part. They're only interested in Davos. You know, Keir Starmer can put his pink boxing gloves on and try and punch a punch bag, you know, for the cameras. He couldn't punch his way out of a paper bag. And that's coming from somebody who has been in the boxing ring and can throw a punch. But you know something, Sonia, what we're seeing here is a complete betrayal of the British people. Our farmers are not the problem. They're not the reason for this so-called climate scam. It's because these globalists are making it up as they go. There's big money involved. But the other really worrying thing is that they are looking after their globalist mates. And the farmers that have come into Westminster are very concerned about the cheap imports that are coming across the border. Once again, Rishi Sunak, Keir Starmer, they're doing nothing to help our own people. Good national leaders look after their own first. That's why I've always been proud of people that put their own people first in these respective national countries, like Donald Trump, like Viktor Orban in Hungary, like many others. But unfortunately, there are too many globalist sellouts.
And it's interesting, isn't it? You don't even have to agree with these policies of these people, for example, to be able to say, well, at least they are putting their own people first. And that should absolutely be the job of our elected representatives. But obviously, the problem is, of course, with globalism is they no longer care about us. They're more interested absolutely in the global agenda and the sustainable development, United Nations 2030, which is what this is all working towards. But there is a fear, Jim, that once these farmers, the British farmers, get what they want, that they will essentially, so they haven't necessarily woken up. They just kind of like, they realize that this is a movement they need to get involved with and that they could equally be incentivized out of protesting against net zero. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that, you know, the reduction of carbon and the kind of policies that have been put out by the globalists within the likes of the World Economic Forum and their adherents like Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer is designed to put the farmers out of business. I think they are smart people. You know, the farmers, they're custodians of the land. They know what they're doing. And they're very, very experienced. If they take these kind of incentives, some might do it. But they must know that the ultimate game that the globalists are playing is total control of the food supply. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that.
No.
They really do want to do it, Sonia. And the reason they want to do it is so that they control the populations. If you don't do what they say, then you don't eat. These people are not nice people. Let me put it very, very plainly. These people are very dark. They're very nefarious in what they're trying to do. And the farmers have to stand together and not be divided and certainly not be diverted by infiltrated NFU people that might be there at the top who are taking their instructions from Klaus Schwab. The farmers need to band together, and the public need to get behind them as well. Now, I saw that in Westminster last night. Hundreds of people coming out cheering on the farmers. The public mood is one of let's protect the farmers, because the people know what these bully boys in the parliament have done. And of course, the farmers were right. They went right to the heart of Parliament. That's where these globalists reside, and they are worried about it, I can assure you.
The absolute irony, though, of a farming union really essentially not really being on the side of the farmers, which is kind of what the idea that I'm getting here, and I will certainly look more into those links. But also, you said something else which I think is really key here, and it's a real clever part of this agenda, and that is they've turned farmers into enemies of the people, haven't they? These people are the problem. They are creating a world that is dangerous for us, and I think it's actually quite clever marketing in many respects, that the very people who supply our food have become the enemy of the people. How can we bring that back? And how can we keep raising awareness to this? You do a grand job out there. You're a social influencer, but with a conscience. You know, you don't do pouty, smiley selfies or anything like that. You're out there pumping out really important, vital information. But you are, Jim, you are. And we need more of that. And you have an excellent following, which also helps. But what can we do sort of on a ground level, one-to-one, to reassure people that not only are farmers not the enemy, but the nonsense that is being said about cattle, for example, is exactly that nonsense?
Well, you know, I never set out to do any of this, Sonia. I really didn't. I came out of a long absence of being on social media. The only reason I went onto Twitter in May 2019 was because the Brexit Party said, Jim, you need to get onto Twitter. You need to start campaigning. I was never really that much of a fan of it. And after the pandemic hit and after lockdown hit, I went back to what I was doing and then jumped on with 1,800 followers that were left of about 2,400. And then the channel exploded. And I think the reason it did was because I wanted to get the truth out. And I'm not frightened to speak my mind. And I was on an American, big American show yesterday, and I was telling them and their audience in America that they're coming for them as well. John Kerry, the so-called climate czar to President Biden, or should we say Obama, because I think it's really Obama. It's like a Scooby-Doo cartoon, isn't it? When they pull the mask off Obama, off Biden, it's Obama that's underneath. And what was he doing in Downing Street just a few days ago with Rishi Sunak in a closed-door secret meeting? That was a bit odd, wasn't it? Look, people need to wake up fast, Sonia. They need to do what we do. Get onto social media, start talking about it, start talking to people in the street, get out on the street and support these farmers because they need our support badly. They're working hard. I don't think people realize just how hard farmers work. They're up at 4 or 5 in the morning and that's having a long lie. Some of them are up at 2 or 3 in the morning just to get things done. And they work all day. It's a hard life. They don't make that much in the way of money or profit. What we're witnessing is a huge problem.
We were joined by a bowler hat farmer the other week, and I think he was doing like 17, 18-hour days. He said this was normal. You know, after he'd finished tending the family farm, he was then doing fruit and veg stalls. And this is, it is extraordinary what people are having to do. Let me read some of the comments that are coming in, Jim. We've got people going, Chris wants them to shut down Westminster. I think that is being achieved to a certain degree. Some of those images were just delightful, though. I've spent an awful lot of time in Westminster, and to actually see tractors rolling through it is a sight for sore eyes. It's something that you don't necessarily imagine that you'll ever see in your lifetime. And he says small farms in Oregon are being targeted by stupid rules. And that's the other thing, of course, that I'm hearing, Jim, is they are picking off individual farmers as well, which is very difficult. So people need some kind of solidarity. And if they're not able to get that from the National Farmers Union, where would you suggest that people could perhaps come for some solidarity if they're feeling isolated here?
Freedom Train International. We're connecting with people all around the world, and Freedom Train International is 100% behind the global movement of the farmers. We are in contact with people in France, Germany, all over the world. There's a lot of people watching what's happening, and what is happening in Westminster could ignite into Wales, it could ignite into Scotland. And Ireland as well, you know, and not just the North, but in Southern Ireland as well. I was across there a month or two ago. Great people. They've got massive problems being caused by globalists there as well. So I would say get on board with what we're trying to do. We're trying to make sure people are aware of what's going on. And it's a real responsibility. And shows like TNT, I have to say, your show in particular, Sonia, you're doing a fantastic job. It's always I'm always proud to come on with you guys. Aww. Because you're telling it like it really is. No, but seriously, you really are. The BBC won't cover it. Sky News aren't covering it. They'll only cover it when they really have to cover it, when people are going to say, why on earth are you not covering this? What's going
on? Or if something bad kicks off, Jim, then they'll be all over it, won't they? If there's violence, they'll be all over it, because it's like, well, we said this was going to happen. So, but hopefully that won't be the case. But that would probably be the only reason, absolutely. And we do, we have a public duty, don't we? People are loving this conversation. Teresa in the comments says, great guest, loving this conversation. This man speaks the truth, says Chris. And that's the thing. I mean, you do, Jim. And that is exactly why your social media profile repertoire has grown, because it's very simple what you have to say. Your messages, you don't complicate up the issues. You make it very accessible for people, which is why I very much enjoy having you on the show, because you're very direct. And that is what we need more of. We're all sick and tired of people who, you know, say one thing and speak out the other side of their mouth. And just the bloke who asked questions, just put Freedom Train International Org link in the comments. So you obviously got some supporters there as well. Jim, before you leave us this morning, a final word from you, please, on this.
Get behind the farmers. Wherever you are, whatever country you're in, get behind your farmers. They feed the nations, not these globalists. These globalists are trying to control.
Absolutely. Really vital. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Jim. Everybody, this is Jim Ferguson. As I say, he's a former parliamentary candidate, but these days he is a commentator and he's out there kicking butt, frankly, and we absolutely love and adore it. Jim, thank you so much. Have a great Tuesday. I will speak to you very, very soon. I think Jim's screen is frozen there. Right. Let me just have a quick, brief look. Just before we go to some news headlines, I had a couple of my own headlines that I wanted to comment on. Today in Parliament, really important, safeguarding vulnerable claimants. Oral evidence will be heard. This is for the Work and Pensions Committee to question the DWP ministers. Now, I've received a bunch of emails and messages about this. People are being treated abysmally. It's gone on for 10 years now at the behest of David Cameron and George Osborne. That is happening today. I look forward to that questioning. And on that note, we're about to go out of this first hour. Of course, do not go anywhere. I will be joined next by Penny Ellis and Jasmine Birtles, not together, obviously. So this is today's News Talk TNT. We're just approaching the 8 a.m. mark and we will be back on the other side. See you in a moment.